Basically, what it's aiming at is a prohibition of persons from excavating, destroying, and altering, otherwise disturbing archaeological sites or objects on public land. There's language that defines, I guess I'll try to go through it quicker. Section 1 defines archaeological object and archaeological site that I suppose you can look at. One of the sort of prominent aspects of that is the public lands is defined as those that are owned by the state of Oregon, city, county, district, municipal, or public corporation. We put that in to clarify all that were covered in the bill. It recognizes that archaeological sites are a finite, irreplaceable resource and that their contents on public land are the property of the people of the state to be protected and managed. Subsection 3 of the bill is the prohibitions, the relevant prohibitions. Now, there's one change in this one. Subsection 1, as on your hand and grows, provides that no person, a person may not appropriate, excavate, injure, destroy, or alter an archaeological site or object on public lands unless the activity is an authorized activity that a person has gotten a permit for. The change in the dash 3 amendments, I put in there, one of them is an issue that was brought up by Representative Agrons, and that is the word appropriate. He was concerned that that was very loose and that anybody picking up something would be violating this provision. The proponents of the bill that I'd had a discussion with first in the original development of the Hand and Gross copy had asked that that be removed. We missed that it was inadvertently left out. I mean, its deletion was left out. So in the dash 3 amendments, and it's not noted on your Hand and Gross, I haven't modified the Hand and Gross version, that would be taken out. The other change that they'd also asked to be put into that provision was, would read before the word object on line 10, as noted on page 2 of your Hand and Gross, would be the word systematically remove an archaeological object, so that the prohibition would be for excavating, injuring, destroying, or altering an archaeological site, or systematically removing an archaeological object. That was another objection that people had raised to the bill, is that they were concerned that any time you pick up an object or sort of casual lookers for objects, archaeological objects, would be subject to criminal penalties. It wasn't the intent of the proponents, and that is in there to clarify that. The other prohibitions are against selling or purchasing archaeological objects that were removed from public land or obtained for private land without written permission from the owner. There are provisions for the sale of archaeological objects if those objects are accompanied by a certificate of origin. And in the case of items that were obtained before the effective date of the act, the certificate of origin would just be a statement that, in fact, the object was obtained before the effective date of the act. In other cases, the certificate of origin would have to tell the location from which it was removed and that it was obtained under the provisions in compliance with the provisions of the act. Finally, the subsection 4 provides that a person may not excavate on private land without written permission from the owner. We've eliminated from the bill sections 4 through 14 that had to do with the forfeiture and seizure of objects and proceeds from the sale of archaeological objects that were obtained in violation of these archaeological laws that are being adopted in the bill. And we provided the sections 4 through 10. Through 6, replace those provisions. They were an attempt to simplify the provisions for seizure and forfeiture, and were taken mostly from the RICO statutes. Section 8 of the bill, which is on page 9 of the Hannah Gross version, provides that only sacred objects found on public lands could be repossessed by an appropriate, the appropriate ethnic group to which that is a sacred object. In the case of, they've eliminated the provision that the State Historic Preservation Office, it was just a broad statement before that the Historic Preservation Office could authorize the appropriate group to repossess a sacred object that's found. It is restricted to those that are recovered on public lands. There are provisions in Section 9 for a person who conducts an excavation having to do with an American Indian archaeological, with a prehistoric or historic American Indian archaeological site, to notify the appropriate Indian tribe and to let them know the location and schedule of the forthcoming excavation and describe its nature and the expected results. That also, it would allow there would be consultation for the purpose of establishing a procedure for handling sacred objects that were recovered from that excavation, and a delegate from the appropriate tribe would be able to be present, and if requested, the Commission on Indian Service would assist persons in locating an appropriate Indian tribe. Section 10 of the bill provides for the Attorney General to institute civil proceeding against persons who violate the provisions of the law and can intervene in a proceeding that is brought by others that are given the ability to bring civil actions. Section 11 provides, this is one other amendment that is in the dash 3 amendments, which is not in the Hand and Gross, and I mentioned it the other day when we were going through the Hand and Gross. At lines 7 and 8, this is what records are exempt from, what is not included in the term public record in this context of the statute. It just has to do with who keeps those records and whether they have to be given to the state archivist. These would not. Subsection C and D were repetitious. So in the dash 3 amendments, lines 8 and 9, which are subsection D, would be deleted, and there would just be one sentence that would read, records or information concerning the locations of archaeological sites or objects as those terms are defined in section 1 of this 1983 Act. Section 12 of the bill is public records and exempts information concerning the location of archaeological sites or objects from public disclosure unless the public interest requires disclosure in the particular circumstance. Except that an Indian tribe that requests the information, if it is related to that Indian tribe's culture, religious activity, would be able to have access to the information. Section 13 there was a House Bill 2442 that was in another committee. That's an existing prohibition against certain excavation and provides a permit process. Section 13 that section was referred to earlier in our bill. It was being amended in 2442, which was in another committee, rather than us not know what was going on and happening with that same section that was very tied into what we were doing. That section was added in and amended in this bill. That provides for the permit process, who can obtain a permit, who can keep the archaeological objects. And then section 14 is just an inclusion in the penalty section that provides that the penalties that are set forth in section 3 would be a Class B misdemeanor. There are several other, should I stop?
Let's take further amendments and then questions about the whole thing. Take the further amendments.
Oh, the further ones. I thought you meant some of those. Okay. I'm distributing now some additional amendments that were requested from Legislative Council. They weren't adopted by the subcommittee. I mentioned them when I gave my explanation the other day in subcommittee, and I've talked further about them with the proponents of the bill. They all are, they either are acceptable to them or suggested by them. The Legislative Council Amendments, House Bill 2440-4, dated 6-3-83, is a repeat of Section 13 of the bill, which is what I was talking about used to be in House Bill 2442. The change in the bill is on page 4, and that was the limitations to the persons that would be able to be involved in excavating. In the dash 3 amendments, and as you saw in your hand engrossed, as is in the hand engrossed, defined private firm, and that was one of the persons that could get permits in order to do excavations. And as described earlier, it had to have a member of its staff be a qualified archaeologist. And apparently, as there are persons who will contract with a consultant, and who don't have somebody on permanent staff, but would contract with somebody, lines 18 and 19 would allow for that. So that not just firms that have a person on permanent staff, but those with consultants would be able to qualify. The dash 5 amendments add a section 23 that provides that the provisions of the Act would not apply to a person who unintentionally discovers an archaeological object on public land or private property and retains the object for personal use. And that is meant to address the concerns of persons who felt that the bill would subject anybody who picked up an arrowhead or who was basically a casual finder of an object from collecting that object and keeping it. Dash 6 amendments.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Smith, what about the weekend arrowhead hunter? I mean, it's a hobby, and it's done frequently in central and eastern Oregon. That's more than unintentional, because they intentionally go out looking for that kind of thing to build a collection.
Well, what the bill prevents is, and this is in the original version of the bill, is excavations, injuring, destroying, or altering a site, and systematically removing an archaeological object. So if if the person would be, as I understand it, the amendments in the bill, if they were out purposely, systematically hunting for archaeological objects, the bill is intended to prevent that.
So a weekender with a geologist's pickaxe picking around in some loose shale or in the sand or moving a bush or a shrub to see if there's an arrowhead under it is in fact more than a casual collector. Is that really the person that the bill is going after, or is the bill going after the more major person who is dismantling an archaeological find?
Well, I think both. I think that they have, that the bill, people that are making, doing concerted hunts for archaeological objects, I believe the bill is intended to prevent that unless they're coming under provisions in the permit process and are qualified if they're related to an educational institution and so forth in the permit process. But it does provide, if it's a casual thing, if you walk along and find something, I don't believe that the object, that the bill reaches those persons or tries to, and that's where it says that the systematically removing it. If they're going out really hunting and removing and don't have a permit and it's on public land.
May I do one follow-up question? I think Sobeys Island, there are portions or great portions of that which are public land, and I can think of scout troops that go out there looking for arrowheads. It used to be a natural location for finding chips and spearheads and arrowheads. I think they still do, as far as I know. It seems to me that'd be a very systematic search for something that's on public lands, and they would be violated with this law then, is that?
Probably they would.
Yeah. Anything further, Ms. Bork? Dash six?
Dash six amendments. That has to do with the public records provisions. The new language begins at line five of the amendments, and that was a concern that I raised in it, basically because I didn't know very much about it, but by exempting information about the location of archaeological sites from public records, from disclosure, it seemed like there might be spots or facilities that are such that are already known and advertised and might be even tourist sites. So this sentence would provide that the exemption does not include information related to a site that's all or part of an existing, commonly known, and publicized tourist facility or attraction.
Those all the amendments?
Did I catch everything?
Okay. Yeah.
I move the amendments as set out in legislative council's version 4, 5, and 6. Is that correct, Linda?
Plus in the dash three amendments, the dash three amendments have some changes that weren't adopted that I described in the handing brochure.
Legislative council amendments are set out in 3, 4, 5, and 6. We get them all?
Mm-hmm.
We got to do more.
That's all I know of.
So Courtney moves the adoption of legislative council amendments dash 3, 4, 5, and 6. So discussion? Is there objections?
Chairman, I guess I'm only nervous about five, unintentionally discovering something. I guess that means you're just walking along looking at your feet and there it is. So you get to appropriate it. But if you tripped over it and you take it, it's okay. But if you see it and think about it, it's not okay. I just think that may be a little loose. I don't know any way to have it part way.
Casual.
Do you want me to move, I move the bill as amended. I move House Bill 2440 as amended to the floor with a DuPage recommendation.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Courtney moves House Bill 2440 as amended be reported with a DuPage recommendation. Representative Lombard.
Since the subcommittee hearing, I have received a letter from one of the individuals who testified at the original subcommittee hearings and raised questions about this, and I guess I would merely pass these on, either for comment or otherwise, as to what some of the reservations still may be. Apparently, note from Mr. Squire that I just received in the mail today, page 14 of the Hannah Gross version, the changing of the permit process certainly indicates, satisfies or meets more with their, or with his approval. On page 15, and I guess this is where we get to the provisions with regards to whom may the Division of State Lands issue a permit. Concern raised is this, that there appear to be three categories of individuals to whom a permit may be issued. First category is to just any person conducting an excavation. If the excavation is undertaken for the benefit of a recognized scientific or educational institution. I take it from that means that the person need not be a so-called qualified archaeologist. Could be an amateur archaeologist, could be a student, could be anybody, but they have to be doing it for the benefit of a recognized scientific or educational institution. I'm not sure that we define a recognized scientific or educational institution. Secondly, and the other two categories are limited strictly to qualified archaeologists and seem to me to exclude amateur archaeologists. That is, a permit may be issued to a qualified archaeologist to salvage material from unavoidable destruction or to a qualified archaeologist sponsored by either an institution of higher learning or a private firm. We go on later to define private firm. As Linda indicated, is either having a qualified archaeologist on staff or contracting with one. But in any event, the circuity of the definitions under both subparagraph B and C effectively limit the granting of the permit to a qualified archaeologist and seem to exclude the, at least what I understand, would be the amateur archaeologist. It seems to me that what this is going to effectively do away with is the possibility of an amateur archaeologist who may be conducting an excavation or collection or what have you for the benefit of a private museum such as the Fable Museum in Klamath Falls. And I guess I need some clarification if that is the intent of this. There's some language further on page 16 of the Hannah version, which Mr. Squire also raised a question about, that the property, any property that is recovered as a result of the excavation remains the property of the Oregon State Museum of Anthropology unless that museum approves alternate curatorial facilities. And I guess the amateur archaeologists are very, very uneasy about that veto power in the Oregon State Museum of Anthropology. Again, I guess maybe there's some turf battles here, disagreements about who's better qualified to keep and maintain these artifacts or these finds. I guess those are, that's the gist of the concerns that have still been raised.
Mark, would you like to comment?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing Friends of Historic Preservation. I believe Representative Lombard, in talking to Dave Powers from State Historic Preservation Officer, the Flavel Museum would qualify as a scientific educational institution. In addition to that, they would also qualify as the, under the provisions allowing for an institution with proper curatorial facilities to accept these items. I think probably the most important thing is that we're talking about items that are on state lands, and that these, it's felt that these belong to all of the people of Oregon. There are, I think, legitimate amateur archaeologists and who can proceed under this bill. But there is another group of people, quite frankly, and they're termed pot hunters. And it's a very active, organized, large business in this state, as well as other states in the western United States. And it's a very active business, and I believe not the individuals that came here to this committee to oppose this bill, but I think there are many of those who are opposing this bill are opposing it, quite frankly, for that reason. And that's not an issue that we've discussed here. Again, I'm not including the people who talked and expressed concerns about the bill here, but the pot hunter situation is horrible in the state of Oregon. It's a major problem, as is in other parts of the state, and this bill will stop that practice, or will help to stop that practice.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lombard.
I guess I'm still not clear how or where in the bill or in the amendments then we come up with the fact that the Fable Museum is a recognized scientific or educational institution. Where do we define that? Who gives the imprimatur of recognition on such an institution?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lombard, you are correct, in the bill it does not specifically define the criteria for a scientific or educational institution. All I can say is, in asking the State Historic Preservation Office as to whether a museum such as Flavel Museum would qualify, the answer was yes.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair?
Is that under... That would relate to the expected action of the State Museum in approving alternate facilities at the request of the permittee? Is that what, how it would happen that decision would be made?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I believe so. Let me try to find my place. I believe...
bottom of page 16 on the handing of the
yes, Mr. Chairman. This would allow for the Oregon State Museum of Anthropology to approve alternate curatorial facilities. Again, the State Historic Preservation Office has advised me of their, you know, their knowledge of that particular museum, that their facilities would be approved.
Is the State Historic Preservation Officer also the director of the Oregon State Museum of Anthropology?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lombard, no. But they currently, under existing statutes, work quite closely with the Oregon State Museum of Anthropology, and I believe are in a position to make that kind of determination as to what would qualify.
Mr. Are curatorial facilities defined anywhere in the existing law, or I guess they're not in this bill, are they?
Chairman, no, and not in existing law. That's correct.
Well, in the view of the sponsors of the bill, could you generally describe for us what would constitute alternate curatorial facilities that would be, would win the approval of the State Museum?
Mr. Chairman, if I could defer to David Powers from the State Historic Preservation Office, I think he's more qualified than I am.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, an approved curatorial facility would be a facility that would be reasonably safe from fire, from moisture damage, where rodents or insects would not eat up organic materials that might be in a collection. It's that kind of concern that to guarantee the continued survival of the artifacts in question is what constitutes an approved curatorial facility. It's also conceived, for example, that an Indian tribe might be able to take possession of some of these artifacts.
Is it then, are we correct in understanding then as a committee that the approval would turn essentially or solely on these aspects of the facility that is?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. There's no intent in this bill to try to remove these artifacts from public view or to prevent the public from having access to them.
No, I understand that. It says they shall remain the property of the state and to be curated by the State Museum unless, so I don't think there's any issue about that, but I think the concern that we're trying to get to here is what